Hail, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And this evening we have with us Cal Grunwald, who's one of our supporters, and Cal is going to be talking with us today about really what's happening financially across America. And I would point out that the price of oil has been going up. Now, the government keeps telling us that inflation is only 2.7%, something like that, 2.5%. Anyway, that's what they're going to increase Social Security. And they tell us it really is wonderful we have inflation under control. And, of course, if you don't believe them, why, you're probably somebody who's going to the gas station and filling up your pump, or like filling up your car with gasoline, prices are going up. Or maybe you're one of those people who goes to the grocery store and you notice that prices for groceries are going up. Or maybe you're buying a home and you notice that prices for homes have gone up in lots of places 20 or 30% this last year. You either are one of those people who believes the government, or you got to believe your lying eyes and, of course, believe that they are not telling us the truth, and they're not telling us the truth. Everything is being done to make us think that everything's fine. Unemployment is only 5.5%. Well, that's because so many people can't get jobs. They just take them off the list, and unemployment is much higher than that. As we continue shifting our jobs, shifting our factories, shifting our wealth overseas, and the prices of natural gas is going up. Now, there's no need for natural gas prices to go up. The government has insisted that the generating plants to generate electricity use natural gas. We could have had electric power generated by nuclear generation all across America. Every other country is doing it. China's building. We're building nuclear plants over in North Korea. France gets most of its energy from nuclear, as does Germany and Japan. And what do they do with their spent fuel? Well, they reprocess it. They just don't allow us to do that here in America because they wanted to create a crisis, and boy, they've sure done a good job of it. So they're going to raise up the price of natural gas, and you're going to begin turning off your natural gas. You know, you're going to use as just as little as you can. During the summers, the price of electricity has been artificially raised, and you'll be turning down your air conditioners as much as you can. Now, there's a stress today. You watch television, at least here in California, they have run these ads about conservation. Oh, you got to turn out the electric lights. And they're conditioning us. They're using television to condition us to conserve. Now, we didn't need to conserve a few years ago. But, of course, this is all part of the Agenda 21 program of getting people to conserve, to lower our living standards. And, of course, this is going to have a profound impact on our economy. In fact, the whole world economy is teetering on the edge of a financial precipice. They're facing a financial collapse in the Philippines. In Europe, their economy is slowing down. The economy is slowing down here in the United States. But, of course, they can't let the American people know what's really going on. We've finished the cycle. There's no way, there's really no place we can go. We have massive debts. According to Professor Kiptikoff, and we've had him as a guest here, he is the professor of economics at Boston University, chairman of the department there. He says we owe future generations some $72 trillion, that's $T trillion, which is what we promised to pay, and there's no way to pay that. So we're going to have real problems here in America financially. And with us is Cal. Cal, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Cal, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay, fine. Well, as soon as we get back from the break here, why, of course, we want to get your views on what's going on. And, of course, as you look and see what's happening across America economically. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us is Cal Grunwald. Cal, what are your thoughts on what's happening economically across our country?
Well, it seems like every time I get on your show, it's it's a worse scenario than the last time. I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal today, and it was talking about, you know, Bush and Kerry, how they each happen to skew the numbers the way they want them to, just to pad their own positions. But the statistic that Bush uses is the one from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They interviewed people in 60,000 households and asked them if the economy is getting better or worse. And of course, they said it's getting a lot better. And the government they claim that they've created 1.6 million new jobs since January 2001. Kerry, on the other hand, uses the same Bureau of Labor Statistics, what they call a payroll survey, interviewing or surveying 400,000 businesses, the actual businesses that give the paychecks. And their statistics show that since the same period of time, January 2001, there have been 585,000 fewer jobs since that time. And that incidentally is the same statistic that Greenspan uses, the 585,000 fewer jobs since January 2001. So I think it's a lot clearer picture, a lot more realistic picture of what's going on. What you say about reality is usually king, and or folly is usually king, or a falsehood. So here we are again. The public is just duped into believing things are getting better, but when you go to the grocery store or to the gas station, your lying eyes will tell you different.
Well, I think that we really have to see what's really happening in the job market. And we've lost about 2,500,000 industrial jobs in this country. The jobs that are being created now are really in non-productive fields. I shouldn't say non-productive. They're not making anything. If you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics analysis, and they look at what the jobs are going to be in the future, they're going to be in nursing. They're going to be in nursing assistants. They're going to be in janitorial service. There's a list of about 10 of them that were published in a recent article in the Washington Post. Not one of them was in manufacturing. Now, a country that's not manufacturing is not a first world nation. And this, tragically, is exactly where we're headed today. There's an organized, concerted, planned effort to ship our manufacturing to other countries, to build up the economies of third world and second world nations, and to lower the living standards here. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. We're talking about what's happening economically, and I was simply pointing out that it seems to be a fairly accepted fact that we have lost over the last several years about 2.5 million jobs in manufacturing. Now, yes, there have been some new jobs that have been created, but they haven't been in manufacturing. They've been in janitorial service and working in the fast food industry. Certainly there's an increasing requirement for nurses and for nurses' aides. But all of the new jobs that we're creating would appear to be in the service industry. We're not creating those high-paying jobs that we've had in the past. In fact, our computer jobs are simply all going over to India. There's no reason why they can't do it just as well as we do here. In fact, their schools over there, their computer schools, their engineering schools, surpass ours because they stress excellence, and we stress here sex, and we stress going ahead and getting along in life, and of course we have a lot of emphasis on sports and a lot of emphasis on mediocrity. And when America was once, of course, the scientific leader in the world, today, now they're looking to India, they're looking to China, they're looking to countries that are graduating large numbers of computer technicians, large numbers of engineers. And I have one of my supporters, the husband is teaching computer science at a major university in Southern California. There are 11 students in the class, because most students aren't going into computer engineering and computers today. Why? because they know there are no jobs out there and that they know those jobs are being outsourced. So, Cal, you know, as we look and see what's happening, this unfolding story of gradually falling living standards here in America, rising prices, certainly increasingly industries that are hiring people are hiring them part-time. There are not any of the benefits, so many of the jobs, and even in many of the industries we already have, why people are being required to pay a higher and higher percentage of their health care costs. So it would appear overall that the living standards for the average individual really are going down. Do you get that impression?
Well, that's very true. In the same article that I was just referring to, they said that the average salary, say for a manufacturing job or a factory worker, the average one is 20% less when they leave. There aren't any more factory jobs. They might take a job in a hotel or a motel or a Walmart or a Home Depot, and they're 20% less than they were getting in the factory. On the average, $9,000 per year less than what they were making. And so this is the reality of it all. Again, the politicians, George W. and company, or George and company, are trying to dupe us into believing that everything is fine and rosy and headed up the right road, but it's certainly not.
Well, of course, if you are making less money and the prices are rising, your living standards are going to begin to fall. Now, I think the hardest thing for the average individual to understand is this is planned. This is not happening by accident. If it was planned this way, and it really doesn't matter whether George W. or John Kerry get into office, the same domestic and foreign policies are going to continue. They have to make the American people think that there's going to be a change, but I don't really think there is. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Certainly my favorite writer on this subject is Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. He is an economist, but he writes for the Washington Times. And you can go up on the Internet and pull down his latest articles. They're all posted there. Recently, he wrote an article, and he said, you know, if John Kerry or George W. Bush realized what the next couple of years hold, they wouldn't be trying to win the presidency. They would be actively trying to throw the race for the presidency, because it doesn't matter which man is elected. Why, the next several years are going to be a disaster, and whoever in the White House is going to be blamed for one of the worst catastrophes ever to befall America. What are your thoughts on that sort of a statement?
Absolutely accurate.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to... We've got a Troy calling from the Walla Walla, Washington. Hi, Troy. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing just great. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I was just saying about if Kerry does get into office or if Bush stays in, I think it might change a little bit if Kerry gets in there, because, I mean, they do got to make everybody believe that everything's going to be different, but, I mean, just the record shows now that, I mean, Bush has lost, what, 1.3 million jobs or something like that?
Well, he's lost an awful lot, but we've lost about 2.5 million manufacturing jobs over the last few years. How many of them we can attribute to Bush? And remember, of course, a lot of this started when Bush came into office. We were going into a recession at that time. And, of course, he did what was logical when you're in a recession. Why, of course, you cut taxes to try to get the economy going. But even with all of the efforts to get the economy going, a dramatic cut in taxes, these really were dramatic cuts, and putting $1 trillion a year into the economy, they can't get this economy going because it's weighted down with debt, and because this program of globalization is designed to gut the very fabric of our society, of our industries, of our manufacturing. And so there's really nothing that George W. could have done to change this, unless, of course, he was to turn his back on globalization and the people who control him wouldn't allow him to do that. But yeah. Kerry is a globalist, too. This is where the real problem is coming from, that and the massive debt that the Federal Reserve has created through the years.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that and everything, but, I mean, I think that Kerry will try to make a change. I think that if Bush stays in office, he's probably just going to, you know, let it continue how it is, you know. And my theory would be, you know, the richer get richer and the poorer get poorer. I mean, as I feel, the whole war thing in Afghanistan and all that, Iraq, I mean, I've heard from, you know, many sources, you know, it's just like it's a publicity stunt, you know. He wanted to do it for, you know.
And so I assume that you're going to vote for John Kerry.
Yeah.
All right, sure. Fine. Well,
I'm a big labor man, and the things that, you know, union is what I'm about, and the thing that you know, Bush is trying to do is sending our jobs overseas and whatnot. I mean, shit, how long can we think, you know, that there's going to be jobs still in America?
Well, do you think that that John Kerry is going to change that? Has he attacked this process of globalization? Has he said anything at all about perhaps we should have some sort of a tariff so that we could have a level playing field instead of trying to get our workers, our laborers, at making $20 an hour to compete with the people in China making 50 cents an hour? Unless we have some sort of a tariff or control on the trade, why, of course, there is no level playing field. Unless, of course, we want to bring our wages down to those of communist China.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that I think that if the jobs stay in America, then, you know, we're going to be stronger here at home than if we send a bunch of jobs over to...
But you see,
or wherever, you know, to get things done.
You're absolutely right, Troy, but that is the plan. The plan, the master plan, is to redistribute the wealth of our country. Have you read the Earth Charter?
No, I haven't got a chance to.
Do you have a computer?
Yeah, actually I do.
Okay, you go up on your computer and go to Google and type in Earth Charter and read that, and then that is the master plan. That is put together by Gorbachev, and of course when Gorbachev came here, we've got things from early 1990s where Gorbachev's foundation is meeting, and who is on the foundation, the co-chairman of the foundation with Gorbachev? George Herbert Walker Bush. George Shultz, who of course is a very good friend of George W., the man who actually picked Arnold Schwarzenegger to become our governor here in California. Ted Turner, the leaders of the entire world are paying homage to Gorbachev. He's one of the men who's pulling the strings behind everything going on. Read his Earth Charter, written by he and Stephen Rockefeller and Maurice Strong, and then give us a call back, will you?
Alrighty.
Okay, do you have any thoughts on what Troy was saying there, Cal?
Well, not to be critical, but it's already too late. I mean, NAFTA and GATT, of course, NAFTA was put in place in 94 with just that express purpose to drain all the good jobs from America and ship them overseas, and they've done a fantastic job. It's already too late. It's just the only thing left is the funeral.
Well, I think that and I think Troy's very sincere. I understand his concern. The trouble is that John Kerry is cut from the same bolt of cloth as George W. They both belong to the same secret society that's so secret that they can't talk about what it's all about.
And the American people have a right to know, and that's where it's all wrong.
You're absolutely right. Okay, anything else you want to say, Troy? Because we've got
no. That's about it. I just want to give you guys a call.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling. You read that Earth Charter for me, will you?
I will. I'll have a chance to read that tonight, and I'll give you guys a call back.
Okay, good night. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
Let's go to Nancy calling from Michigan, and she has a question for Cal. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi. My question is, it just does not make sense that they're giving everything away to the third world countries, the USA, basically, selling us out. What are these hierarchy going to do? Are they planning on bailing out of the U.S. and moving over there, that they're making them the superpower now?
All right, that's a good question. How would you respond to Nancy's question, Cal? Why are the elite doing what they're doing?
They don't really want to move. They just want to be free from the clutter and, you know, us useless eaters. So the more they can get rid of us, the happier they're going to be in their, superimposed utopia.
I think, Nancy, you have to understand what this is all about. There is a master plan. And if you simply call our 800 number, 800-544-8927, and ask for a copy of our October newsletter, we will take you into the writings of the occultists, the people on the other side who are coordinating this whole thing. And as we quote extensively from a man named Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist, who was part of the power elite, who was a 33rd degree honorary Mason. When he died, of course, the Masonic magazines referred to him, often referred to as Masonry's greatest philosopher. And Manly P. Hall talked about the dream of creating a world empire. a democratic world commonwealth. And this is what it's really all about, with true equality for everybody except for the ruling elite. That has been the dream since the time of Plato, and that's the dream today. Hey, you hang on. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Cal Grunwald. We have Nancy on the line from calling from Michigan. Nancy, there really is a master plan behind everything going on. Have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
No, I haven't, but I have studied in depth somewhat on, like, you know, the Rockefellers and the Skull and Bone Society and the Illuminati and all that. So I understand that, but it just seems ludicrous that they're doing this, and it's not going to get them anywhere. It's like, we know the end of the book, you know?
Yeah, but in the meantime, there's going to be terrible suffering in this country because remember, the rain falls on the just and the unjust.
Exactly. True. And what is it that we can do? This is what frustrates me. Like, Bush nor Kerry are good to vote for. I mean, you know, what do we do in a situation like this? Pick the best of the two?
No, you never vote for the less of the two evils. You try to find out if there's somebody else running who represents your views. Have you looked into the Libertarian Party? Have you looked into the Constitution Party? Have you ever even heard of their candidates?
I just started hearing a few of them on the radio.
Well,
I haven't done deep investigating on them yet.
Well, let me suggest that you check out the go on Google and look up the Constitution Party and look at their platform, and of course go to the Libertarian Party and look up their platform. Are you coming from a Christian point of view?
Oh yes, definitely, 100%.
Okay, fine. Well, the problem with the Libertarian Party is that they represent the world's second oldest religion. In fact, the platform of the Libertarian Party was whispered in the Garden of Eden during the first days of creation. You know, and that is that you make the decision as to what's right and wrong. And that's what the serpent told Eve. And basically, if we don't have God's guidance, why, we're going to make mistakes. And that, of course, would be the difference in my estimation between the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party. I believe I'm a libertarian in many respects, but I believe there has to be God's guidance. And there are some people in the Libertarian Party that believe that way. But I would think that Michael Perutka is running in the Constitution Party, and the reason you haven't heard of him is because the media is controlled, and they don't want people to hear about him. What are your thoughts on that, Cal? Cal?
Well, yes. Can you hear me all right?
Right. Go ahead, Paul, Cal.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. You know, without God, you know, watching over and guiding and this is what made our country so great in the, you know, when the founding fathers came over, the people from Europe, they were oppressed by the rich, the noble, and by the church. And so they wanted to come over here and live free lives, away from all the oppression. And so that's why, you know, the first actual textbook was the New England Primer, which is nothing more than Psalms and Proverbs, and that's how they taught their children to read and to write and all the moral values. So our country was founded on that basis, and that's why it is the greatest nation on the face of the earth, but as it happened to Rome, all the moral deterioration, all those original standards and convictions have slowly gone out the window, and we find ourselves in a very, very decadent place, morally, spiritually, in every way. And this is what's happening, of course, I shouldn't say to the economy, but along with moral decadence goes economic decadence. And of course, then other things come in to take over the country, the New World Order people.
Hold that thought for just a moment, though, Cal. We've got a great to bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. We've got Nancy calling us from Michigan, and we were just really talking about, her comment was, well, it seems that we just have two candidates to vote for, and neither one of them seems to be taking a position strongly in favor of preserving America's economy. Both of them are dedicated globalists. Both of them are dedicated to shipping our jobs overseas. Both of them are dedicated to unrestricted immigration. Both of them are dedicated to the United Nations, and of course both of them are dedicated to continuing the war in the Middle East. So Nancy's point was, what can we do? And I suggested she begin looking around and see if there are people on the third parties, and I'm not talking about Ralph Nader, I'm talking about the Libertarian Party and the Constitution Party here in California. The Constitution Party is the American Independent Party, but their candidate is a man named Michael Perutka, who's a born-again Christian, who's dedicated to trying to preserve our constitutional republic, and of course the Libertarians are running a candidate as well. So we do have alternatives, and I'm sick and tired of voting for the lesser of the two evils. Nancy, you're going to have to make that decision, but you get up on the computer and you start looking about the other two parties that are there, and forget about Ralph Nader. There are two other parties that are never mentioned by the media, by the controlled media, because they don't want you to know they exist.
All right. I've only heard that was who I was talking about, Michael Perutka.
Right.
That I heard one time only, you know, his just a small blurb on the radio.
All right, fine. Well, I know him personally. He's a personal friend, and I will tell you he is a Christian gentleman.
Super. I'll be painting this all over my truck to blow Harry and Bush's socks off, and let's vote for somebody else.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much. Anything else you want to ask, Nancy?
No, that was it. You answered my question. Thanks, and you have a blessed night.
All right, fine. Let's go to Jim, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good. You know, just in relation to what the caller before the last one was saying, you know, it's just amazing how unaware so many Democrats are of the fact that their own party has been actively supporting the same trade policy that George W. Bush is supporting. I mean, it just seems like it doesn't get talked about enough. You know, Bill Clinton signed NAFTA. We ran huge trade deficits under Bill Clinton. You know, he did nothing about it. I haven't heard John Kerry make any real statement or any real commitment that he's going to change a trade policy. You know, he says that he's going to fix some tax loophole or something, and I think that's the only thing that he said in specific that he's going to do to fix the trade policy, that the problems that you guys are talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Jim. How would you respond to what Jim is saying there, Cal? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, he hit the nail on the head, because they're not talking about real issues. They're skirting it. It's all periphery stuff, and again, more smokescreen. The whole thing is, the real disaster is taking place right under everybody's noses, but nobody seems to pay attention. The dollar is getting, devastated, you know, against the euro. Our account deficits, our trade deficits are taking their toll. The oil prices are over $55 a barrel. And people's wealth, their savings are being eroded away. You know, rather silently, but awful, you know, but horribly. And people aren't even paying attention to that. And so, like Thomas Jefferson said, you know, years and years ago, if you can control the nation's currency, you can control the people. And so these, you know, people are seeing their wealth just evaporate, and they don't even know what's happening.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think the great tragedy is that most people don't understand there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown University, wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and I know you know that one, Jim,
yeah.
And I don't know if you're acquainted with that one, Cal, but on pages 1247 and 1248 of that book, which incidentally was actively suppressed for many years because somebody came in and bought up the publishing, Macmillan Company, and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book so it couldn't be reprinted. And if you have any question about that, why, we actually have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that story, and that's in our four-tape set on the secret government. But on the page 1247 and 48, why, Professor Quigley said, you know, what we need is two political parties that are exactly the same, so they can vote the scoundrels out at any time, and, of course, nothing will change. And this really is what's going on today, and the average individual has no idea that we are being given the choice of two candidates, and it doesn't matter whether we get candidate A or candidate B, and the same foreign and domestic policies will continue. They put on a great show, but tragically, of course, it's not going to change the war. It's not going to change the globalist program of transferring America's wealth throughout the world. Jim, do you want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Cal Grunwald, and of course Jim is on the line from Santa Cruz. Jim, did you have another question or comment you make before we let you go?
Just a brief comment. You know, in some ways the Democrats are worse than the Republicans, because not only do they want to ship jobs overseas, they want to spend more money here as well, whereas at least the Republicans are consistent. They want to ship jobs overseas and ruin this country, but at least they want to cut taxes, too.
But, of course, you can't cut taxes and increase spending. That's the problem that we're in right now. This is why we're going to run almost a half a trillion dollar deficit this last year.
Yep. So, well, anyway, thanks a lot, you guys.
God bless. Thanks so much, Jim. And let's go to Bob, who's calling us from New York. Hi, from Albany, New York. How are you doing, Bob?
Hello, Dr. Stan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, sir. I've been listening with great interest to your topic tonight. What you talked about was the trade deficit,
right.
And of course,
but even more than that, the conscious effort to ship our factories and to ship our jobs overseas by outsourcing.
Well, that's exactly, what I wanted to comment about.
Okay.
Because a true source of a nation's wealth, it's its ability to take something that is nothing out of the ground and to turn it into something and then to market it and sell it. We've been stripped of our industry. I remember reading a article in the business section at a seminar they held up at Dartmouth College where my brother went to school, at Tuck Business School, and he said some years ago, the industrial base of the United States has not gone to the Southeast Asia. It's not in the process of moving. It's already there. So we've been stripped of our national sovereignty.
You're right. But you see, they don't want the American people to know that. How would you respond to what Bob is saying there, Cal? Do you have any comment on that?
That's very true. I mean, it's already gone, and people are talking about trying to keep it here, but it's already gone. He's actually absolutely true.
Bob, there's no way that we would be able to build a rocket like we did back in the late 1960s and send a man to the moon. We would have to get those parts from other countries. We have destroyed our industrial base. America's under attack, not from without, but from within.
Oh, definitely. We definitely have enemies within. There's no question about it. I think of all our... the parts that are going into our military that are subcontracted out, that supply our military base, they're all being subcontracted out overseas.
Hold that thought there for just a minute. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob, calling from Albany, New York, and he's commenting about the fact that so many of the military parts, so many of the industrial parts, they're all being produced overseas. Now, we are, of course, assembling some things here for the present time, but how long that'll keep going? Certainly, it's a very, very real question. Why? Because it's so much easier to put these things together over in China or down south of the border in Mexico, or the whole idea of the Central American Free Trade Zone, or the Free Trade Zone of the Americas, which of course they're going to try to get through, is so that we can produce these products down south of the border in Bolivia and Ecuador and raise the living standards of people in those areas as we intentionally and purposely lower the living standards here. People don't understand. There are people who have a different view of the world. They have a different world vision. And their loyalty is not to the United States, but it's this idea of a global democratic commonwealth. And, of course, until we understand that we are to defend ourselves from enemies foreign and domestic, and some of the greatest enemies, domestic enemies we have, are working in the halls of government today. Anything else, Bob?
Yes, sir. One more thing that occurs to me that it kind of popped in my mind some time ago as I watched this unfold. Have you ever heard anything in engineering called redundant systems?
No, I haven't. I'm not an engineer. What about you, Bob? Cal, do you know anything about redundant
systems? I haven't heard that term.
Go ahead.
Well, basically, like in a spacecraft, they'll put five computers in, so if one fails,
right,
there's another four to back them up. That's what they're doing right now, because if America will not be assimilated into the global government system and the New World Order, we'll be overthrown, we'll be destroyed, and they have all sorts of redundant systems and manufacturing all over the world, so the world can go on.
Well, I think that what a terrible tragedy is for the people here in America to face the loss of their pensions, because there's no way that the government can pay the Social Security and Medicare they promised. And the people who work for the great corporations, their pension funds, are many of them are simply going to go belly up. They're guaranteed by the government, but the government's not going to have any money to compensate them. They're destroying the value of the dollar, and as that happens, why the people in annuities and bonds and CDs and bank deposits, and they're all going to be wiped out, as the people of Argentina were 3 or 4 years ago, the people of Russia were a decade ago, as the people of Germany were during the time preceded Adolf Hitler. And the average American has no idea that what's happening is all long-range planning. And, of course, with America destroyed, there will be no barrier at all to the New World Order, the New World Economic System, the New World Currency, and, of course, the New World Religion. Anything else you want to say, Bob?
Yeah, just one more thing. It occurs to me, it's a lecture I heard some years ago. If our economic system is beholden to a lot of other countries holding the notes and buying our bonds,
right?
And if we default on those, that means we're what, bankrupt?
That's right.
Now, if you default on your car loan, they tow your car away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if a country defaults on their loans, it's the same thing. It's called kingdom towing. In other words, war.
Well,
that's what the message I'm trying to get across here. It's like we're in deep, deep trouble.
I know we are. And, of course, Argentina recently has defaulted on their notes. And, of course, they've bankrupted a lot of the poor old people over in Europe and Italy and France who bought Argentina's bonds, you know, believing what they were told by their stockbrokers that these were just as solid as the dollar. Well, what they found out, that the stockbrokers lied to them, and they've impoverished a lot of the people there in Italy and France who bought those. Argentina is saying, we're not going to pay it back. But what Argentina is doing now is buying gold on the world market to try to strengthen their currency. They're going to try to protect themselves. Our leaders are intent upon undermining the very fabric of our society. And those people are in both political parties. Anyway, thanks so much for calling, Bob.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Cal, of course, I know that you are in the gold and silver market. Tell us a little bit about what you think people ought to be doing at the present time to protect themselves, at least to try to have some protection, as we move into the very difficult times, which I think are going to follow this election. We already find that the stock market is continuing to fall. The price of oil is continuing to rise. And, of course, the dollar is not doing very well at all, is it?
No, the dollar, in fact, has took a dramatic drop. It's at an 8-month low now against the euro, and it's the euro is like a 126 against the dollar, and in fact the dollar is at an 8-year low against the Swiss franc, and it's really in deep trouble. Again, most people aren't really paying attention to that, but all that means is that the whatever they have in the cash or CDs or money markets, mutual funds, bonds, T-bills, whatever it is, It's losing value all the time, and in fact, the rest of the world recognizes the chaos, the economic chaos, and has been buying gold and silver. That's why gold right now is at $429 an ounce. Gold has gone up about $20 in the last 3-4 weeks. Silver is at $7.36. That's where it finished today. And so these metals are tremendously strong. They're climbing. Gold is almost at 430, $1 away that it was about 4 or 5 months ago when it spurted up. And now it's made a very, very steady, very, very strong climb up there, and it's going to continue to go. So people around the world are fleeing into gold for security, into silver, simply because they know that, you know, it's real, and it's not the dollar, it's not the franc, it's not the pound, it's not anything that's papered or script or an illusion. So people need to take a hard look at where their wealth is and what form it is. If it's in paper, if it's a number on a computer chip, you need to do something fairly quickly, as a lot of people are, by the way. A lot of people are taking the matter into their hands finally, because they see there's no turning back. The dollar is not long for this world. I'm not saying next week or next month, but you know, if we listen to the big names, you know, Greenspan, Paul Volcker, and Robert Rubin, they're telling us rather quietly and rather subdued that we're going to have a dollar crisis in the very near future.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is what Warren Buffett is doing, and this is covered in my August newsletter. And in that newsletter, we simply quote what Mr. Buffett is saying about the fact that he doesn't believe the dollar is going to be stable, and he has actually spent $19 billion shorting the dollar. In other words, he's buying foreign currencies, betting the dollar is going to go. Now, these are simply not just buying it. These are derivatives. These are margined accounts, and there's a time limit on a margined account, and you have, you know, if the time runs out, why, you lose your money. So what he is doing, he thinks, and I believe that Warren Buffett knows what's going to happen. I mean, you don't start out investing $100 in 1956 and end up with $40 billion in Berkshire Hathaway stock if you don't know pretty well what the future holds. And Warren Buffett is betting on silver. He's got large stocks of silver, and he's also shorting the American dollar. I think that should tell us. We know that George Soros has said he's investing in foreign currencies. He's a multi-billionaire because he doesn't have any confidence in the American currency. And I think people are going to have to look after themselves. They're certainly not going to get any truth out of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, or certainly not out of television. So now you've actually written something, haven't you, Cal, that goes into the background of investing. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about that and get out your telephone number?
Sure. I've written a paper, a 26-page paper, that I will send people free if they just call in and give their name, address, and phone number. It's a 26-page paper entitled Gold and How to Avoid the Scams in the Coin Industry. And I've been in the coin business for over 8 years. I worked for two of the largest gold coin companies in the country, and that's where I've kind of witnessed the most horrible scams imaginable. And so I just warn people, I said, if you want to, you should buy some gold and silver if you can, you know, with your discretionary money, because it's something to fall back on, something real, something tangible, when our dollar is no longer of any value. And in my paper, I explain, you know, the value of gold and silver, why people should hold it. I also try to educate people about the different scams that you're going to run into if you call these different coin companies. And I don't name any names of coin companies, but there are a number of them. Most of them, unfortunately, pose themselves as Christian organizations. And, wolf in sheep's clothing kind of thing. And that paper is a very, very good educational paper. So anybody who wants it, all they have to do is call me at 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. Just request it. I'd be glad to spend as much time on the phone as you want to, just discussing your financial situation and anything else you'd like to, at no obligation. I'll send you the paper, and if you would like to do something like that, I'd be happy to help you out. I do sell gold and silver coins myself, and I welcome your call.
All right, fine. And, of course, if you'd like to get in touch with Cal, again, that's 717-648-2682, and Cal does help to support our ministry, but he has excellent reputation, in the field that he's in. Well, we're facing very, very dangerous times. Because, of course, we have a massive deficit. We have a massive trade deficit, which will be over $500 billion again this year. And, of course, what most people don't understand is the only thing that is keeping the American economy afloat at the present time is the fact that the Chinese and the Japanese are taking the money that they're getting from us and they're buying our bonds. In other words, we have a very massive trade deficit with both of those countries. And instead of simply, in the past, simply buying up things to help their own economies, they've been buying American bonds to the tune. Initially, when we started talking about it, was $1.6 billion a day. The latest figure is $1.8 billion a day. China and Japan are buying of our currency to keep our economy afloat. Now, if they don't buy it, then the Fed has to monetize that to create money out of nothing and start buying up those bonds, and that is highly inflationary, and could certainly stimulate a very real drop of the value of the dollar. And, of course, the thing is that what has happened recently is that China has stopped buying so much in the way of American dollar, American bonds, and has begun to buy up commodities, copper. One reason the price of copper has been going up so high is China's been laying in massive stocks of things that are tangible. In fact, she's made a $5 billion offer for a large copper mine up in Canada. She's taking the money and simply buying anything she can in the world with the dollars before the value of the dollar goes down. The dollars that she got 3 years ago have lost 30% in value. Do you think anybody wants to buy dollars when the value of the dollar is going down? Because you buy it, it's simply a guaranteed loss of value. And there have been several articles that have come out of communist China to that effect that, you know, the economists there are saying, do not load up on American dollars. So the Chinese people now are being allowed to take the money that they have and invest in gold. The people of India are investing in gold. People throughout the world realize we're on the edge of a financial precipice, and they're investing in gold, trying to protect their savings that they've worked so hard to accumulate. And well, the tragedy is the average American not understanding the history of banking, not understanding that our whole banking system is built upon an illusion. Banks create money out of nothing. That's the whole basis of our fractional reserve system. And there's no instance in all history where a nation has gone onto a fiat money system where the banks have created money out of nothing and created a tremendous bubble where that system has not eventually come down. And my concern is, I don't think this is too far in the distance. Nobody can tell you when it's going to happen, but all the indications are, especially with the market acting the way it is now, that we're not too far away from that. What are your thoughts on that, Cal?
Well, those are exactly my thoughts, that we are very, very close to this. It could happen overnight. Again, there are many different wild cards in the whole equation, too. Say, for instance, we have a terrorist attack in a major city, you know, and we go from orange to red alert, and all of a sudden the government says we're going to close the banks, we're going to declare a banking holiday on the financial institutions and not allow people to take their money out. This, all of a sudden, you know, the dollar hasn't failed, but you know, you can't get it. You can't access your wealth, you can't move it around, you can't do anything, you're stuck. So that's another very, very real danger. So while the dollar is declining in value, you can't even get your money out of institutions that you've trusted all those years.
Okay, we've got Mary calling from Covina with a question for Cal. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. What would a person do if they had money in an IRA and couldn't really get it out to do anything with it, you know, without taking it all, you know, when it would really cost you to, you'd really have to pay taxes on it.
Is this a self-directed IRA?
Yes.
All right. What would you tell her now, Cal? What suggestion would you make to Mary?
Well, there are some situations that are extremely difficult simply because your tax penalties and consequences are rather severe. You know, only you can make that decision. If you're going to instill or get a 30% penalty and have to pay taxes another 20%, so you end up with probably 50% of it. You have to kind of determine, well, is it worth it? Or would I rather have 50% of something than 0% of nothing? I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. And
okay.
That pretty much has to be your decision.
Well, if the stock market fell and you left your money there, or whatever stock or whatever it is you owned, would that be the only way to not lose? I mean, certainly not to try to get it out when it's gone down, but to just sit tight and wait?
Well,
Mary,
sit tight and wait.
Go ahead.
If you sit tight and wait, you know, you'll get nothing.
Mary, basically, when the stock market fell in 1929, I think it was 1935, something like that, before it, maybe it was, 41 or 45, something like that, before it got back to where it was in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you could do, if it's self-directed, of course, you can invest in gold and silver stocks, I think that, and uranium stocks. Those are really doing quite well, and I think that they have really a pretty good upswing. You could take out a little of the money and put it into a gold and silver and pay the penalties on it. You don't want to do everything. You want to diversify. You want to be in multiple things. You don't want to be in one stock. You want to be in a number of stocks. And of course, you want if you don't have any gold and silver, you might take a little of it out and pay the penalty. But don't do anything quickly. Do very, very careful in what you do, because remember that we're entering difficult times. And certainly, if you put all your eggs in one basket, why, somebody can steal the basket.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it fell, it wouldn't mean that everything, would it? Or would it mean, like in 29, was there absolutely no value on anything?
Well, I think most of the things went down. Incidentally, you can there's a central fund of Canada, an IRA can buy that, and they actually take physical possession of the gold and silver, which may be almost as good as having it yourself. That's called the Central Fund of Canada.
Okay.
Okay, and if you want to call me off the air, you can.
Okay.
And, I'm not a financial advisor, but I can let you know about some of the mistakes I've made in the past. You get a little older, and you hope you get some smarter.
Okay, thanks.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Good
night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course the one thing that some IRAs actually can put gold and silver coins into them, and is that true, Cal? Can't you, some IRAs you can put gold and silver into or not?
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. It sounds all right, but I write about that in my paper. I don't advise it because, first of all, you lose that kind of flexibility. Once you put it in gold, it's very difficult to get it out, and secondly, it's stored in some strange name bank in New York, and if we do have a crisis, they shut the financial doors, you'll never be able to get it anyway. So it's better to have, one in the hand and three in the bush. So that's why I recommend people do something, even though they incur kind of a severe penalty. It's better to have something to fall back on because, when the dollar does fail, gold could easily get $2,000-$3,000 an ounce, and so we're up to $50 to $100 an ounce. So it's better to have some ounces of those precious metals than promises to pay from a bank that's got the doors closed.
Well, I think that we could be entering into some very, very difficult times, and all we can do is suggest that you diversify so you don't get stuck and don't get too badly hurt no matter what happens. Well, we've only got about a minute and a half here before we have to let you go. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, again, these are very troubling times, and the people who are really concerned about their families should be considering to put something into gold and silver, and so they have something to fall back on. Silver especially is tremendous for barter, the dimes, quarters, and halves, to buy a loaf of bread or a dozen eggs. And I talk about that a lot in my paper, how it can happen, and a practical way it can happen. And if you would like to get my paper, again, just call 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682, and I'll be glad to send you the paper. I'll be glad to talk to you about, if you have enough discretionary money, if you'd like to do something like this, you're more than glad to spend as much time as you need to without any kind of high pressure, because I hate that kind of tactic. I'll never use it. I try to do everything through education, and that's what my whole intent is.
All right, fine. Well, Cal, I really appreciate so much of being with us this evening. Our guest this evening has been Cal Grunwald, and of course, I've known Cal. Certainly we've talked to him in the past and talked to him again. I think it's important times that people begin realizing that we are reaching the end of a cycle. And we'll talk a little bit about these cycles and how they're created by the banking system that has created money out of nothing. Some people have gotten fabulously rich, but most people will lose almost everything. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Cal, thank you so much for being with us. Good night. We'll talk to you later.
Well, thank you, Stan.
God bless.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I really want to mention we have written our latest newsletter. That is the October newsletter, going into the history of banking, the history of central banking, and I think that my last three newsletters, my August and September and October newsletters, are excellent. You can find them up on the Internet. Now, we will send you one free copy of the newsletter. If you want, of course, the August newsletter, that tells you what Warren Buffett's doing. The September newsletter, newsletter. It gives you the background of what's happening to our country economically. And the October newsletter, which I'm just finishing now, is really the history of banking in the United States, the history of central banking throughout the world, and taking you into the background of usury, why it was, of course, outlawed for centuries, that Plato and Aristotle had written against this concept of usury, which is the very basis of modern-day banking, which is not only simply usury, but it's a fractional reserve system by which bankers create money out of nothing, and then they have the audacity to charge us interest on it. It's one of the greatest scams in the world. It produces a tremendous artificial prosperity for a time. But then comes the day of reckoning. And if we just had an isolated country, it would be one thing. But we're part of a global economy, and that whole economy is beginning to rock seriously. If you'd like a free copy of October newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We carry several books which we think are very important for you to read. One of them is called The Creature from Jekyll Island. One is called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. One is called Gold, written by Professor Sutton. And the fourth one is the fiat money inflation in France, what happened in France in 1789. And as you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again. We also carry a video called Phenomenon. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, The Fiat Money Inflation in France, and Gold by Professor Sutton, and the video Phenomenon. If you'd like to get more information on those items, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We want to remind you that we are having a week from Saturday, that's the 6th of November, Saturday the 6th of November, an all-day session out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We're bringing in speakers from outside. We're going to cover a number of subjects. We think it's going to be a great program. We're going to talk about how music is being used to transform the society and bring in the New World Order, and how this music really alters society. In fact, Aristotle and Plato both recognize the impact of music on society. The average difficulty is that most people today don't even know who Aristotle and Plato were, and if they do, they do not understand what they said about music. And, of course, music can guide the course of a civilization. You'll be amazed at this talk. I will tell you, I've heard this talk, and it's something like, well, nothing quite like it. And then, of course, Bill Sardi will be there talking about health issues, and Michael Shaw will be there talking about the Agenda 21 and this whole idea, this master plan for the destruction of the existing world and the institution of the new global society under the control of a ruling elite, which is what sustainable development is really all about. And then, of course, I'll be talking about how they have an active program of poisoning our youth, and, of course, poisoning our adults. And we'll give you the documentation on everything we're saying. And if you're concerned about your health and the health of your children, you need to hear what we have to say. And then, of course, if you would like to come to the program, remember, lunch is going to be served. We have to have reservations this week. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I think that there's going to be a great crowd, and we hope to see you there. 1-800-544-8927. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle, this incredible battle for the soul of America. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hold just a moment here. But our special guest in studio this evening is Ed Knepper. And Ed, of course, is an old friend. He, for many years, actually did a program here at Radio Liberty and using our station. He worked here in town. And then God called him into the mission field, and he and his wife have gone to Kurdistan, and they're working over there among the Kurds. So I'm going to let Ed tell you a little bit about this. How long have you been over there now, Ed?
I've been over there almost 2.5 years.
All right, fine. And of course, didn't you set up some sort of a school there for teaching the Kurdish children so they'd get a good education?
Definitely so. We've been successful at doing that. Praise the Lord for that.
Well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about what motivated you to go, why, of all the places in the world, Kurdistan, and what you've learned about the culture there, what you've learned about the people, what you've learned about the Christian revival there.
Well, some listeners may not know what Kurdistan is, but Kurdistan is a political region. It actually doesn't exist in the minds of most nations officially. But Kurdistan is, where I'm at in particular, is northern Iraq. That's right, northern Iraq. Working with the particular Kurds there. In the north, there's about 4 to 5 million Kurds that have their independence and have had their independence for the last 12, 13 years. After the first Gulf War, we started to do work, that is my organization, started to do work with the Kurds through various different political and people. And we've developed a few now, going on 4 classical schools. They're called classical schools of the needs. As you know, if you go to Acts chapter 2, you'll find the needs in there. They're the descendants, the Kurds are the descendants of the ancient Medes. You also find them in the book of Daniel.
Yeah, no, because you had the Medes and the Persians. The Persians, the Iranians, and the Medes are this area that was up sort of nestled in then between Iran and Turkey.
That's correct. Now, Kurdistan is pretty huge. There's 35 million Kurds in the world. 15 million live in Turkey, which make up about 25%, 30% of its landmass. You have Turkey, Iran, Armenia, Syria, and Iraq. So you have 5 different nations that make up Kurdistan. As you know, Iraq is about the size of Texas with 24, 25 million people, and a great great percentage of them are Kurds, by the way. But the Lord has been doing amazing things over there in the north of Iraq. Yes, I do live there. I have a residency there. I don't have any more residency as far as house-wise in the United States. It's been phenomenal to see what we are allowed to do and how we do it. We're allowed to start these classical schools that are made up of 95% Muslim students. And that's amazing in and of itself. And we take international teachers that come and train the local teachers in the Christian curriculum. We tell the people when we open the school, this is a Christian school. Biblical principles are taught. And do you have any problem with that? And overwhelmingly, almost 100%, almost, say they have no problem with that. And we are allowed to teach English. We're allowed to incorporate biblical worldview and see things change there. This is how we're going to fight the ideology, Dr. Stan. We're going to fight it by changing the hearts and the minds of the individuals. That's what you do on this radio station, by trying to change people's worldview, to get them to think behind the scenes. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to get people to change their worldview, and starting from little children until they're an adult.
Well, I think it's really exciting that you would actually be able to be over there. Now, have you learned somewhat the language? Are you able to speak Kurdish?
I am able to speak some of it. My wife is much more fluent than I am.
Well, my wife is much smarter than I am, too. So,
yes, I'll give you a little bit if you don't mind. If I came to your home, which is every day you go to somebody's house, you say, Choni, Bashi. They repeat to you, say, Basham Sipasma Mun, Malwa Chona, Basham Sipaspahua. I said, how are you? How is your family? How is your children? Everything's fine. Thanks be to God. And that's just a standard greeting.
Well, you know, of course, this is really a tragic area because the Kurds are a country. They should say they are a nation without a country. They are a people, and of course, they are dispersed between Iraq and Iran and Turkey and is there one other country they're in? What's the other country?
Armenia.
Armenia. So, but of course, they are a specific people. There a lot of them have actually come to the United States, haven't they? Just because the life over there is so difficult and so hard.
That's true. The 7,000 Kurds live in Nashville. Actually, probably more now. More about 9,000 or 10,000 since they've had about 12 years.
Oh, that. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is an old friend. It's Ed Dipper, and he is a missionary in Kurdistan at the present time. He's been with us in the past, had done radio programs here when he was working in Santa Cruz, and then God called he and his wife to do something for the Lord, and so they picked up and they moved to Kurdistan, and you actually work through a church here. Do you have a church sponsorship? How does that work?
Well, I am self-supportive. Thank you for asking that. There are several churches that actually support me. My background is, I came to Christ as an Assemblies of God church many years ago, but then went on to college, got my undergraduate in theology, working in my master's currently. Several churches in the Santa Cruz area support us from different denominations, Presbyterians, Assemblies of God, Baptist. So it's amazing that we can have all these denominations actually working together to support a missionary in northern Iraq. I'm self-supported, raising my own support, and God has blessed us, but still in need of support, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we believe in Ed, and we support them. You want to get your telephone number out now, and we'll get it out again later in the program. Do you want to have a telephone number? Or?
Well, I give you an email. I don't have a specific telephone number.
Right.
But my email is the same with my radio station that I had for 3 years. It's laymantolayman@yahoo.com.
That's laymantolayman.
That's right. That's laymanto, laymanto@yahoo.com. If you're interested, more information, you want a newsletter, just give me an email. Tell me you heard me on Dr. Stan's show, and I'll be happy to send it out to you.
Well, now, what's happened in Kurdistan? Is it fairly peaceful there since, of course, they were really separated from Iraq? They've been separated from Iraq for really many years, going back, to the first Gulf War?
That's correct. And as you know, the Kurds have an autonomy up north. It actually is quite peaceful. As at present, there are several thousands of Kurds and Arabs leaving the south and moving up to the north. And when I say the north, I don't mean just, 50 kilometers away from Baghdad. I mean several hours away from Baghdad. And the rents have gone up extremely high, almost doubling 200%, which the people now are trying to ask the government to regulate these rent controls because they've just gone off the charts. But it is safe. I walk around the streets in my city. I won't mention the specific city, but I walk around the streets, and I feel very safe there. People are very warm. In fact, they even fly the American flag next to the Kurdish flag.
Really, do they? Well, I'm sure that this part of Iraq is really very, very grateful to the Americans for coming in, because, of course, Saddam, who's always sort of a threat to their existence there. Now, what do they do as far as economy? How do they make a living?
Yes, well, there are several what we call dukans. These dukans are little stores, mom and pop stores, is if you like. They sell vegetables, they sell meat. There's several of them. You can't really buy all your products in one store. Now, they do have supermarkets that are coming. There is actually called a Mazi Mart in the city of Duhok, which is close to the border of Turkey. That's kind of like a small Walmart. believe it or not. And, but in my city, they're starting to grow, they're starting to have, you know, develop this type of system. They're also, believe it or not, are developing a lot of, pizza shops. Like, actually it's called Domino's, but, you know, Domino's doesn't actually exist there, but they just take the name and tag it onto their store. They have, you know, different things like this. So, the economy definitely is growing.
No, no, of course, what is the major export they have? Do they have oil there that keeps the economy going? Foreign currency?
Yes, they do. Now, you know as well as I do, Dr. Stan, that a lot of that, a third of Iraqi oil, of all of the nation of Iraq, comes from the city of Kirkuk, which is made up of three major ethnic groups. You have the Turkmen, you have the Kurd, and you have the Arab. And so a third of all of Iraqi oil exists in Kirkuk, and it's very sad. I have driven through Kirkuk several times, and to see the rundown houses, the poor people, the dirtiness of the streets, and to see that Saddam left those people there while he, skims off the top of the Food for World program money.
What's happening there at the present time? Are they able then to get some of the proceeds from the oil from their area?
I don't know that. That may be in the making, but I haven't heard anything of that.
All right. So, other than oil, is there any manufacturing there? Or, you know, because of course they have to be able to have money so they can be able to bring a goods from outside.
Yes, they do get. Well, they do get a lot of goods from Iran. Believe it or not. You know, there's a lot of smuggling and going across the borders. You know, the Iranians, you know, turn an eye so that they don't...
Like a blind eye.
Blind eye, yes.
Right.
Yeah, so I saw that firsthand. There is a lot of that going on. They also get things, product from Turkey, which is better product than from Iran. They're farming people. Like I said, also have these businesses, but it's not very expensive to live there. In certain parts of Kurdistan, especially in northern Iraq where I'm at, it's not very expensive to live there. So you can, except for these rents that are going out of the roof, you can do quite well.
Well, now, what about electricity? What about the water? I mean, the things that we take for granted here.
Well, I mean, that's a great question. Water comes once a day.
Comes
once a day, and you better fill up your tanks on the top of your roof house, top of your roof. Electricity, when I left, it was 18 hours without electricity a day. I have a generator, and so I can actually turn my generator on for 4 or 5 hours a day, turn off for 2 hours, and turn it back on. Electricity comes from different cities. It comes from the dam called Dukan. And Saddam at times, when Saddam was in power, would actually purposely cut off electricity from the north for various, you know, various reasons. And, it's unfortunate. I wish that we had more electricity. Unfortunately, at this time, that's not the case.
I think that the people here in America, we take these things for granted. I mean, electricity, water, sewage, all of these things which are provided by the local communities. But here, halfway around the world where Ed is living, these things are really sort of a luxury.
Absolutely. In life, Dr. Stan, life is so much slower. We don't realize. We think we're very hospitable people as far as entertaining people when they come to our homes. And to some degree we are. But when you look at the Kurdish culture, or in particular the Middle East culture, you come to realize that these people have a very close bond with each other since the time they were very small and they've grown up. And they have a lot of fellowship. Keep in mind that though a lot of Iraq is socialistic and communistic, even though it's an Islamic country, it's not like Saudi Arabia. So they spend a lot of time sitting down together, the men, having tea, hanging out, so to speak, and developing friendships and relationships. And about 60% of my time is actually spending time like that with these Kurdish elders from various churches.
Well, now, of course, are these Christian churches? Is there a fairly stable Christian society there?
Well, I wouldn't call it a Christian society, per se, but I would definitely say that the church is alive and well in the north. Now, I know we've had problems with the church in the south, with particular Shia bombings, and that's very unfortunate. You know, when this constitution by Bremer was brought up, part of what was supposed to play a dominance was religious freedom. You know, it's like the Old Testament when the Jews came out of Egypt. The oppressed becomes the oppressor. And the Shia has come out of dominance and slavery, from Saddam, and now is trying to become the oppressor. And the Christians have to take the brunt of that, unfortunately. Now in the North, their churches are alive. They are evangelistic. They are not underground. They preach the gospel. There's discipling going on. There has been assassinations. Somebody by the name of Ziwar was assassinated about 2 years ago up in Zaho, which is right on the border of Turkey, for his faith. And there have been others as well. So Christianity is different there than it is here.
Now, these are Chaldeans, because the Chaldeans were in that area. And then there were Assyrian Christians. Which category would the Kurds be?
Well, that's true.
Would they be Kurdish Christians?
you got it all right. There are Chaldeans, and there are Assyrians, and there are Kurdish, former Muslims. That may be not very surprising to you, but it is for that culture. You see, the Catholic Church there, for the most part, and there is a Catholic Church, they do not evangelize Kurdish Muslims. They pretty much, because of the history and the slaughters that have gone on between village and village and Kurd and Muslim and Christian and what have you, they have had off-limits to evangelizing Muslims. So what happens is if you get a Kurdish Muslim that is interested in Christ, maybe they go to a Catholic church, and the Catholic church will send them to the evangelical church.
In other words, that would be
The Kurds. That's right. That would be the Kurds. And we have seen this, and people come to the Lord, and actually it works quite well. And then they start getting discipled and going to church, and then my job is also to disciple and mentor them as well.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, what percentage of the population there would be considered to be Christian?
In the Kurdish area, it's probably a very small percentage. Now, keep in mind, as you said, there's Chaldeans and Assyrians, so that makes up somewhat of a population. But those who are probably truly believers, they don't call themselves Christians there. They call themselves believers. They make a distinction. So there's a small percent, but, God willing, that will grow.
Oh, you're talking about 10%, 5%?
I would probably say more like 1 to 2% in the North.
All right, fine. And the rest of it, well, we'll be back in just a moment with Ed. To learn more about Kurdistan, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Ed Nipper. We're talking about what is really going on in Kurdistan. And Ed, of course, has gone there as a missionary. Now, how do the local people look upon you? I mean, here's somebody from America coming into a Muslim area to preach Christianity, and you already have maybe a couple of percentage of the people there already Christians, although they would fit into one of the categories, either the Catholic. Is that the Greek Catholic, Greek Orthodox, or is that Roman Catholic?
It's the Roman.
It's the Roman Catholic. What about Greek Orthodox? Is there any Greek or Armenian Orthodox there?
There is some Armenian. I'm not quite sure about Greek. I haven't run across anybody that was Greek Orthodox.
And then you would have the Chaldean, and then you would have the Assyrian. And these are all sects of Christianity that have been there. And they really go back to biblical times, don't they?
That's very true. The people receive us quite well. Now, they assume, as we do when we meet someone that is an Arab, we assume that they're Muslim. That's a natural assumption. So they assume that as Americans or Westerners, there are other Westerners there, by the way, that they are automatically Christians. And so they watch our conduct, they watch what we're doing, how we treat people, how we commune in the community. And they're not afraid to come up to you, at least the Kurds are, and then say, many Kurds speak English, by the way. Hi, how are you? I'm learning English. Can I take a picture with you? And it's very honoring. It's very honoring. But there is this likableness that and how they treat you is very respectful. You know, when you go into the, there's a lot of internet cafes where I live. When you go into the internet, they sell these little pins that you, lapels, I guess, you put on your shirt, and it has a Kurdish flag and American flag together. Not only are they flying the real flag, but they sell these little pins so you can wear on your jacket representing Kurdistan and America together.
Well, that's really rather nice to know, at least in this area of Iraq, that, you know, we are so popular. And we, of course, they really are grateful to us because the American no-fly zone in northern Iraq really took the Kurds out from under the Saddam's regime going back to 91-92. So but they've had a semblance of freedom from the central authorities since that time.
That's very true. Unfortunately, I mean, this is no mystery, and the Kurds know this and have actually spoken to me about it. You know, the, America turned their back on them, and when President Bush at that time said, you know, rise up and overthrow Saddam, and, you know, we turned our back on them and let them down. So, unfortunately, I mean, they will still mention that today. It doesn't seem that there's bitterness in their heart over that for some reason, and perhaps they don't express that to me, being a foreigner. But they are gracious to me as a foreigner. They allow me to make a lot of mistakes. It's very true. They're very kind in that. But there also is something that many Americans need to understand. And this is what really frustrated me when we tried to talk with Saddam or try to talk with Europe about, you know, finding a compromise with Saddam. There are two things that you have to realize what goes on in the Middle East. Middle Eastern countries are very good at deception and have also have an unwillingness to forgive. Deception and unforgiveness. And I found that to be in the Kurdish culture.
All right, fine. Well, we're just going to just have to wait just a moment, and then we'll bring our stations back on with us. And I think that maybe we can sort of develop this idea of unforgiving. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Ed Nipper. We're talking about his experience going into an entirely foreign country, into Kurdistan as a missionary, setting up schools there. But Ed was saying that there are two parts of the culture that is so difficult for an outsider to understand. One is the fact that there is deception, and deception is sort of part of the way of life there. And the second, of course, is unforgiving. If somebody's harmed you, why, they will never forget. Would that be a fair statement, Ed?
Yeah, that's pretty close there. It's very hard to get back on somebody's graces. Now, again, as a foreigner, there are exceptions. They understand that. But if I was a Kurd, you'd have to be very careful not to really, really offend somebody. That's just part of the culture. If you read the scriptures in the Old Testament, you see a lot of that with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and their whole family. The foundation of it was built upon deception. That still exists today. And that's really hard for us as Christians to get across, even to the believers, that it's wrong to deceive. And if it's sinful, they have a hard time with that. They love stories. They love parables. They love I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Big Fish, Dr. Stan, but if you ever have a chance to see an American movie called The Big Fish, that's a great analogy of the East and the West.
In fact, I did see that story, and of course, this was the fellow who always told this story about this big fish that he'd caught and that got away. And of course, it was the biggest fish that anybody had ever seen. And of course, this was his whole story. In fact, everything he did seemed to be a story, of aggrandizing himself. And of course, his son, everybody, of course, had lost all respect for him. Because he felt that everything he had ever told him was a lie. So pick up the story.
Yes, well, here you have Perfect the Father in The Big Fish. Actually, all the facts are accurate in one respect. All the characters that existed in the movie actually did exist. But what he did was he took the characters and he made them bigger than life. He, through storytelling bringing like a web together, unfolding the things that were occurring in life, he made them bigger than life. That's the Middle Eastern thinking. The sun is Western thinking, scientific, factual, exact factual. Don't veer off to the left. Don't veer off to the right. It has to be precisely right. And that's how we think. But in the Middle East, they don't think that way. Everything is in parable. It's in story. It's not exactly the truth, not exactly the way I said it. I could exaggerate by, you know, a little bit. And when I come to that culture, or other Americans come to that culture, we find it very frustrating to deal with because you can't get, quote, a straight answer.
Well, now, how did you learn about this? How did you, do you have somebody there that, that can sit down and talk to you? Is there some older missionaries there? Or are you sort of go there on your own?
Well, there are a few older missionaries there, but you learn by mistakes. There's no handbook that comes you know, by way and say this is A, B, C, D, and this is how you do these things. You do learn by mistakes. You have to trust the people in one sense because they know the culture and the language better, far better than I do. And in this other sense, you have to walk in a biblical way and you have to teach them and train them what that biblical way is and yet be sensitive to their culture.
Well, now, of course, are you actually training people to be ministers as well as, of course, in your schools, training the children?
Well, that's true. Not specifically the children. That's something different. But I disciple and mentor the elders and the deacons and those who are in the congregation. And to see them being trained and transformed by the Word of God and then training their congregation is, you know, it's such a blessing to see. We want them to change society. I'm not there to go and evangelize and to convert Kurds. I'm there to give the tools to the church so they can be better equipped to help their own people in business, in the church, in politics, in education. We want to see these spheres changed so that the ideology of the country changes.
And, of course, this is the sort of thing we need to be doing right here in America as well, because if the church was doing its job, we wouldn't be having all the problems we're having in the United States today. But since the church has sort of turned its back and I've become very introspective, and of course we have spend a lot of our time on other things, we don't see the transformed lives being projected into the community and our society changing. So maybe we can learn something from Ed and what he's doing over there in Kurdistan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. You know, I would love to be a missionary and go off and do something like that, but I'm getting a little too old for it. I think God's called me to be here on the radio. But of course, we can support Ed and we can give him an opportunity to talk to you and let you know what he's doing over in Kurdistan for God. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ed Nipper, an old friend who's just home on a sabbatical, and of course he's been over in Kurdistan, three and a half years now?
Two and a half years.
Okay, well, the time goes so quickly, it's hard to keep track, but now of course you'll be here, what, another month or so, and then you head back?
About that, yes. Looking forward to getting back. I love Iraq, I love the people, I feel that's where I need to be. I get very homesick when I leave Iraq. The fellowship is so close and tight. In fact, there's a pastor in the city of Kirkuk, I won't mention his name just for security reasons, but in the city of Kirkuk, who has a congregation, and he knows his congregation intimately. In fact, what he does with his congregation is he says, okay, for example, he says, Dr. Stan, you have these gifts and talents. I can see them in you. I've seen them in you since you were a teenager. And so I want you to use these spiritual gifts in the church. This is what I want you to do. And sometimes people argue with them and what have you. But then they find out, wow, I didn't know that I could do this certain type of ministry. And he says, okay, Ed, I've seen you for the last 15 years. These are your spiritual gifts. This is what I want you to do. And people go do it. Now, I always look at that model and say, in the churches in America, how can we take something like that and tell people, look for people in the congregations and say, John, Steve, Mary, Susan, I see these gifts in you. go, this is what I want you to do, go out and do it. You know one reason why we don't do that, Dr. Stan? It's because we don't know our people. We don't know how to get close to our brothers and sisters and spend time with them. We are a type A culture. In Iraq, in the Middle East, they're not a type A culture. They're what we call a being culture. We are a doing culture. And that conflicts a lot.
Now, well, of course, it's fascinating to see. That's, of course, you're talking about a very, very small part of the population being Christian. But you're in your schools, where, of course, you have these Muslim children coming in, and their parents bring them to your schools. Why would they bring them to your schools rather than taking them to a Muslim school?
Well, the education system in Iraq is very poor. They use one particular book over and over and over. Year after year after year, and the teachers, what they basically do is they take a book, like I have a book in front of me, they take a book, they read it, and they tell their pupils, I want you to memorize these two, three pages. You know, it takes 3 or 4 days, they memorize it, and they just regurgitate it after a test. Now, what happens is that the people are great with their memory. I mean, they will outdo me in memory any day. But they don't know how to connect A and B, or B and C. They can't think beyond memorization.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ed Nipper, and if you'd like to ask him some questions about what's going on over there in Kurdistan, why, or his ministry there, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Ed was saying that, of course, they have actually four schools now that they're working on. They're the classic schools, they're giving classic education, and almost all of their students are Muslim. And, of course, these would be people who couldn't afford to go to school. Their parents want them to get a good education, and they can't get a good education in the Muslim schools because all they do, of course, is simply to teach them to memorize, but they don't teach them to think. And as Ed is saying, that they can't connect the various thoughts. They can memorize, and they can memorize very well. And memorization is important, but you've got to be able to then think and apply what you've memorized and put it into perspective. And that seems to be what you find is sort of really failing there.
That's exactly true. Most schools only last 4 hours a day, and all of you are saying as teachers, boy, 4 hours a day, I wish I could teach 4 hours a day and go home. That's pretty much how it works. Boys go to boys' school, girls go to girls' school, and they switch it up. Maybe from 8 to 12 the girls go, and then the boys go from 1 to 5. And in the meantime, you got kids playing all over the street, or they're studying for their exams. They call them exam tests or exams. But that's about it. Our school is almost 8 hours a day, and our teachers are trained after school, as well in English and as well in worldview, Christian worldview. And so it is the only school, to my knowledge, in my city, that has teachers working more than the average teacher in the city. Now, we teach English. And I can tell you, within 1 year, from first grade to second grade, the students already speak English, and they know it very well. And so this gives them an advantage when they come to study science or they come to study certain Western literature. They'll be able to read it and understand it and apply it to their lives.
Well, now you talk about the Christian worldview. What sort of a book do you use? Do you use some book that we might know about to give them this Christian worldview?
Well, the curriculum that is developed over here in the West, in Nashville, Tennessee, and then put together. And one example would be Veritas curriculum, as well as others. I am not the curriculum developer. My wife is, and someone else that does that particular project. But let me give you an example, okay? Now this is a small thing to us as Christians, but it's a huge leap for them. We were teaching on ecology one day, and we were teaching that God is the creator of the earth, and that he desires the earth to be clean and respect it because it reflects who God is. Obviously, the earth isn't God, but God created, and we should respect and honor it, and not pollute it. Well, in the Kurdish culture, what you do is you really don't throw things in the garbage can when you go on picnics. You just throw things on the ground and then somebody else comes and picks it up and throws it in the garbage can that you pay for. Okay, fine. But a kid from our school actually took his lunch that he ate, instead of leaving it on the ground, took it and put it in the garbage can. Now, for us, that's a small thing. But there is the start of a different worldview thinking in his mind, in his heart. I bet you he stopped and said, you know, we've been learning about how God wants us to treat the earth. Okay, I'm going to put this in the garbage can. And his parents were shocked, because that's unheard of. That's what we're doing. Little by little by little by little, we pray that what we teach will transform their little hearts and someday, perhaps, see Christ for who he is.
Well, now, of course, you actually teach, you have courses in Christianity, or is this simply woven in the course of the curriculum?
Well, it's woven in, but let me give you one woven. They were going through the Alexander the Great, and they came to Alexander the Great, they learned all about Alexander the Great, and one of the questions was, what's the same between Alexander the Great and Jesus Christ? That was a question presented to them in their curriculum. Now, you know, you'll hear a lot of people say, Alexander the Great, he was a conqueror, and Jesus Christ, he was a conqueror, you know, and they make these conquering statements. My daughter also attends there, and said something a little bit different. She said, well, the difference between Jesus Christ and Alexander the Great was Jesus was a prophet, and Jesus loved people. And Jesus conquered in a different way. Now, that, you know, they're not thinking that, those little minds. They're not thinking that. But just hearing words that somehow Jesus is different than what they've been heard from the outside or even from the inside will take fruit and will take seed in their heart. It's a matter of time. It takes a long time, Dr. Stan.
I'm sure that it does, but what a wonderful opportunity to begin to mold a culture and to make it better. And the fact that, you know, the Muslim parents will bring their children to a Christian school knowing they're going to get a Christian worldview, you know, and of course I'm sure that they will be able to learn from their children, because the Muslim culture is so entirely different than the Christian culture. I think that the average Christian has no idea. They don't understand the way the Muslims are. I mean, they have some wonderful things in their culture. You know, they're very strict, they're very moral. You know, they believe usury is entirely wrong, and they're absolutely right. One of the worst things ever happened to Christendom was when, of course, British Parliament embraced usury back in the 17th century, and then the Catholic Church accepted usury, and no longer scowled on it. It did up until the 17th century. Why, the Catholic Church said usury is wrong. The Bible says usury is wrong. And yet that became the basis of the modern-day economic system that's gotten us into so much trouble through the years. So there are many great ideas. Read some of what Osama bin Laden said. Osama bin Laden said, you're wrong because you use usury, talking about Christian America. And maybe we ought to just contemplate, is there any truth in what he's saying?
Well, I think there are definitely truths in Islam. We can see that. Here is the paradox, though. I had a person come to me when we were on picnic one day, actually two, and I sat down for 2 hours and talked to them about Islam and Christianity. Now, these are two Muslims. And one of them said to me, you know, Mr. Ed, he said, I stopped going to mosque. I said, well, why did you stop going to mosque? And he said, because if I kept going to mosque, I would become a terrorist. I said, really? He said, yes. He said, all that's taught there is hatred.
That's exactly right. That is the and really, if you get into the basics of the Muslim faith, if you go all the way back to Muhammad, jihad was an important part, and this hatred of Christians and Jews was an important part of their belief.
Yes, that's very true. And some other things that he pointed out to me, we actually gave him a Bible, and he read it. He read what's called the Injil, the Gospels. And he said, you know what I found out about Jesus? And I said, what did you find out? He said, Jesus went around healing people, forgiving people, and loving people. And that really, you know, blew his mind. Because that's so contrary to what you see in Islam. Listen, I live in the Middle East. I see what people do in the name of Allah. I hear what people say in the name of Allah. I had a friend of mine who just became a believer told me, he said, Ed, you wouldn't believe that on Haini, which is on Friday, which is when all the people gather in the mosques and they start preaching their rhetoric, he said, the mullah in the mosque said that we know, quote, we know that there are people, Christians, proselytizing our children, and that we need to get them out of the country. Okay, so
he's talking about you, of course.
Most likely talking about us. Well, you know, where's the peace in that? Where's the plurality in that? Where's the tolerance in that? It doesn't exist in the Middle East, and yet we think as Christians that Islam is peaceful and loving and caring and charitable, and that's all hogwash, in my opinion.
Well, you're absolutely right. In fact, there is no possibility that of tolerance for Christianity. In fact, you know, if you are a Muslim and you convert to a Christianity, at least in many cultures over there, you'll be simply done away with by your father, and in many areas, why, it's perfectly all right to kill you because you've converted. Now, it's really not like that in your area, where they would actually kill somebody, or would they?
Well, that depends. You have to. A year before I got there, they got rid of mercy killing in my city, and you know what mercy killing is.
No, I don't know what mercy killing is.
Mercy killing is that if your sister or your wife is even suspected of committing adultery, you have the right to put her to death as a man. Now, that's not factual or evidential. It's suspect. Why is that? In the Middle Eastern culture, it's very hard to produce facts because rumor after rumor after rumor after rumor is circulated within the culture. I have experienced this personally. I have experienced it. I have said something to somebody one time. They misunderstood me. I literally asked for forgiveness two or three times. And then the word got back in the culture that I said something that was totally contrary to what I said. And it really, really frustrated me. Because once it comes out of your mouth, if they misunderstand it, it's all over. It doesn't matter. So you have to be very careful what you say there. It's like a rumor mill there. I do want to say one thing, Dr. Stan, that is very honorable in the culture, which we have lost in America, and that is the honor of the father. I was up at Bethany College not too long ago, and there was a father that came by my table that I was sitting at for lunch, and he said that his son just became class president at Bethany. He was a freshman, became class president, and I said to him, congratulations to the father. And he looked at me and he said, oh, it's not me, it's my son. And I thought in my mind, I didn't tell him this, I thought in my mind, I said, you know, that's typical Western. In the Middle East, you don't congratulate the son, you congratulate the father, because the father is the producer of the son. And there's a sense of honoring the father, honoring the mother. The father takes responsibility for the family. He is the head. He is the one who is to provide financially. He is the one that takes everything upon his shoulders. And we honor the father. And we do not want to shame the father or the family. We've kind of lost that in this culture, Dr. Stan, I think, in my opinion.
I think that we really have. Now, I really believe, of course, having studied a little bit about Islam, I think that it is really a terrible, terrible religion for what it does to the individual spiritually. But, of course, there has to be certain qualities within that to have attracted so many people through the years. And, of course, you're right in the very heart of this. Are there many Muslims who are coming to know the Lord, do you think, in Kurdistan?
Yes, they do. And they don't do it the conventional way, actually. Many Muslims have dreams, and they have dreams about Jesus coming to them, speaking to them, and leading them to speak to somebody about the gospel. Now, I know a lot of Christians are, you know, leery about that, but it happens a lot. And I have seen people who have come to be Christians through Christ coming to them in a dream. In fact, many Christians over there are, I wouldn't say into dreams, but when they have dreams, they try to interpret them. And sometimes they're wrong, and, you know, sometimes they're right. But, you know, I had 9 baptisms. I know that doesn't sound a lot, but I had 9 baptisms at my house, in my yard. And it was phenomenal to see the the love of Christ in these new baptized believers and going out and ministering the gospel where they're at. It will cost them something, Dr. Stan, to speak about Christ. It can cost them their family. Their family can shame them, turn their back on them, kick them out, have them killed. Every Muslim in Northern Iraq has a green ID card that says Muslim on it, unless you're an Assyrian or Chaldean, because those are historical churches. But you're a Muslim, like it or not. If you don't like it, that's too bad. You're a Muslim. And if you do convert, you pay the price in some fashion.
Well, I think that, of course, the great tragedy is that we have this conflict between the religions, and I personally believe that Christianity is the only thing that offers mankind salvation. I think it's a terrible thing that the Muslim faith has spread as far as it has. In fact, what people have really forgotten is that this whole area of what one time was Christian. And, of course, the Kurds at one time were Christians, and the Muslims came in, and they didn't try, of course, to convince people that they were right. They didn't try to win them around by evangelizing. They said either, you convert to the Muslim faith, or we're going to kill you. And that is how the Muslim faith spread, was by the sword. And they simply killed the people who didn't go along with them, who refused to repudiate Christianity. The Muslim faith is spread by violence and hatred, and there is this intense hatred, you know, among the mullahs, certainly not among the people. Many of the people are wonderful, warm people. And, of course, I think the Kurds as a whole are great people. And I think that, of course, the hope for Kurdistan, the hope for Iraq, the hope for all of the Middle East, is to win the hearts of the people, as Ed is doing, certainly not try to win them over militarily.
You know, as Christians, Dr. Stan, and we have to realize that we must speak, as you do, on many subjects. We must speak the truth. It's going to cost us as Christians, as a listener, it's going to cost you something to say that Christianity is the truth. Just the other night, two nights ago, after we had the prayer, Dr. Stan, down there in Santa Cruz, Bill Garraway and myself sat and talked to a Muslim who was from Morocco for about 45 minutes. And at the end of the conversation, I explained to him the gospel, how man was a sinner, how he needed to be saved, God built it. And I said, in very simple terms, not using elaborate theological justification, propitiation, all that type of stuff. Just simple things in a story. That's what I did. And you know what he said to me at the end? He said to me, you mean to tell me that the Jews who reject Jesus Christ as Messiah and the Muslims who believe that Jesus is a prophet, you mean to tell me that the Jews who reject Jesus Christ as Messiah are going to hell? And I said, yes. And he was shocked. He was shocked because he had this idea of Muslims and Christians and Jews, we all worship the same God and we all get along and we're all going to go to heaven someday. Well, the reality was, he was wrong. And if you don't tell people the truth, we're being disingenuous to Christ our Savior.
And I think it's really such a simple story, and of course, if they really ever have a chance to read the scriptures, and of course, they believe in Jesus, but they believe he was just another prophet.
That's right.
You can get them to read the Holy Scriptures, and can they read in English, or do you have a Muslim, do you have a Bibles in Arabic for them?
There are Bibles.
What do they speak Kurdistan there?
They speak Kurdish,
right.
But they are, many of the men speak Arabic because they were under the control of Saddam. Many of the women do not, and I don't really know why that is. But they do speak Arabic. They prefer not to speak Arabic. In fact, there were some people that came to an internet cafe and they knew a little bit of Arabic. They were Americans and they said, Shukran, and the Kurdish, that means thank you. And the Kurdish man said, please. He said, don't speak Arabic to me. Speak Kurdish.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this program. Let's get your telephone or your email out there one more time.
Sure. It's layman2layman@yahoo.com. LaymanToLayman. All one word. Send me an email if you want a newsletter, you want some information. Be happy to send it to you.
And, of course, Ed is doing what I would love to do, and that is go to another country to spread the gospel. Since I can't do it, he goes over there in our proxy, and certainly my wife and I do support Ed's ministry. We hope some of you out there will seriously consider doing that. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Ed Nipper, and it's always so good to talk to Ed about what's going on in Kurdistan. And certainly a wonderful opportunity to be in this city. And to now, do you actually have four schools in this one town, or are they in separate towns?
Well, they are in separate towns. Our fourth school is actually being built this January, but there are two preschools, and then there is one elementary junior high school. You know, we're starting them at preschool age, so it's quite fascinating to see how this will all work out 10, 15, 20 years from now.
And, of course, you're giving them classical education. In other words, you're going into teaching the great philosophers of the past. And
well, not Plato and Aristotle, not that type of philosophy, not during the golden age of philosophy. When I say classical, we're actually teaching them the base English and rhetoric, these type of things. They need to get the foundation for this so they can think for themselves. Once, you know, every subject has a language. Math has a language. Literature has a language. You need to learn the language efficiently and sufficiently so that you can go on to the next level as you get older. You can tie these things together. Why is literature connected to history? Why is that important? They're not separated. They're together. Why is math not only important, but how does God play in math? Because God does play in math. Not everybody believes 2 plus 2 equals 4, by the way. The Hindus in India do not believe 2 plus 2 equals 4. But it does. Why is that? And so we try to incorporate this into the literature.
Well, of course, everything is in perfect order, whether it be the periodical table or the study of physics or the study of mathematics or the study of astronomy.
Right.
Everything really is in perfect order. It just couldn't have simply happened by chance. There had to be a divine plan. There had to be a creator. If we got about a minute more, what are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, Ed?
Well, it's my pleasure to be here with Dr. Stan. I think as Christians, we definitely need to please pray for Northern Iraq, pray for all of Iraq. It's in the news every day, and we know what's going on there. I won't elaborate on that for the time that we have. But pray. You know, ask the Lord to change the heart of the people. Pastor Yusuf once said, when he was here visiting the churches, he said, you know, you in America are dealing with the fruit of Islam. The fruit. But we need to go where the root is and cut it off at its base. And that's what I think we need to have. Massive amount of Christians going to these 1040 windows. By the way, there's not a massive amount of Christians going to the 1040 window.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when, of course, we're going to have to say good night to our special guest this evening. His name is Ed Nipper, and he simply picked up and left a beautiful Santa Cruz where I live and went off to become a missionary a couple of years ago, and prayers have been with him, and certainly he's having an impact over there. And we need people who are willing to do this sort of thing that maybe some of the older people like myself and can't really do, but we need people who really are full of the Spirit of the Lord, are willing to go over and minister in foreign countries, because, of course, this is a great, great area for evangelism there in the Muslim world. So, Ed, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you so much. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
And, of course, we're going to have Ed on all of our other programs as well. And, of course, Ed, remember you can repeat what you've said, because they're all different audiences. And, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you would give serious consideration to helping Ed in what he's doing and to helping Radio Liberty as we reach out across America, indeed across the world, with a message of hope, because, of course, the only real hope in the world is not in politics, and it's not in our material possessions. It's in our faith in Jesus Christ. So we, of course, hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, if you'd like to get a free newsletter of ours, and, of course, we have all sorts of newsletters. Our latest one gives you the history of the banking system in the United States and how it has been used over and over and over again to impoverish the American people. And it is about to very, very soon be used for exactly the same purpose, because there is a spiritual force behind this whole incredible movement behind the central banks of the world. And this is what my newsletter covers. If you'd like a free copy of that newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You'll have to specify the October newsletter. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down any of our programs, and we hope you will. We hope that you'll pull down our newsletters and copy them and get them in other people's hands. And you can look at some of the items that we have there that we offer as well. That's one way we're able to subsidize some of what we do. And then we want to remind our listeners about the day-long seminar we're having here in the Monterey Bay area on the 6th of November. It's a Saturday, November the 6th, a week from this coming Saturday, and we're bringing in outside speakers. I promise you it's going to be an exciting day, an exciting program, and of course it's going to start early in the morning. You want to get there about a quarter to, after 8, 15 minutes after 8, or 8:30 at the latest, and we'll start at 8:45, and we'll go through right through till 5 o'clock. We will be serving lunch, so we have to know how many people are coming, and of course we'll ask you to give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 to make a reservation, and we hope that you'll do it as soon as possible, because we need to have an idea of exactly how many people are going to be there. It looks like we're going to have a pretty good crowd, and we hope that if you come, that you'll bring your friends, because you know, even if they don't understand what's going on in our society, we think by the time they leave on the evening of November 6th, they'll have a much better grasp of this true the spiritual nature of what's going on in the world today, and the very real problems that we face here in America. So, again, our number to call is 1-800-544-8927. Our web address, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day and really not get much of anything accomplished. But some people really do listen that often, and we have one lady who's our speakers in her kitchen, so she doesn't have to sit in front of the computer. Other people, they go to Radio Shack and they get little sets of earphones where you actually plug in a transmitter to your computer, and then you can go any place in the house listening on FM. Amazing technology that's available now to get the information out. Well, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.